Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
You know, every time I hear that music, I'm sitting here dancing in my chair. It's so embarrassing.
I can actually confirm that for people who aren't in the studio with us. That's exactly what he's doing.
That is a great, great, great tune. We've got a great opening tune. We're here in the studio with Richard Polinelli. This is, of course, The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Mr. I Am Getting the Flu, Jim Christina. Richard Polinelli, of course, is with me tonight in studio. And we also have Bobby Jean Bell on the phone. Bobby, with us. Bobby Jean.
Yeah.
Oh, hi.
From Albuquerque.
You and Bobby is on phone from Albuquerque, New Mexico. So, I got to ask, how was your New Year? Because you're in New Mexico now. You guys should be getting snow soon.
We had a quiet Christmas weekend and a quiet New Year's weekend, but I'll tell you, I spent the entire New Year's weekend, hardly sleeping, to read the book for tonight, which was over 800 pages. And once I got into it, Jim, I really couldn't put it down.
Uh-huh.
So my New Year's was reading tonight's book.
Well, we found it hard to carry it around.
Right.
812 pages. Anyway, let's get everything out of the way tonight. Richard, you're gonna you have first dibs on the ads tonight.
I do, and I have a question for you guys out there. You've just finished writing your first book. Now what? Guess what? Your work's just starting, because the hard part is what's coming up after you've gotten done and type that "the" in there. If you're a first-time author, whether it's a book, a screenplay, a novel, whatever you've written, if you want to get that into the hands of a reader and put more money into your bank account along the way, that's your ultimate goal, but it's not easy to do. And that's what Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing are here for. We're here to help you get that book finished, polished up, and ready to go so that readers will read it. We have a very interesting program that we're just starting this specifically for the first-time author. I'll get your book on the shelf, and you will get a royalty rate of 60%. That's a 60, not a 16.
Right.
You usually get 15% from the publisher, and then you got to give your agent anywhere from 10 to 20%, depending on. So there's more money for the writer, and that's what our goal is to get your book read and get you paid. So if you'd like to know a little bit more about that program and how we can help you get your book published and ready to go, you can give us a call at 805-795-3165, or you can email us at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or you can email me if you really want to torture yourself and try to do my last name, rpolinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com. Give us a call, give us an email, and we will get in touch with you and talk to you about what the options are and get you done.
There you go. There you go. And I have to tell you, I just got another nice little healthy check from my Jonah Blue Book.
There you go. Those are always nice to get, aren't they?
This has been like a boom for me.
I actually had my best year overall, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and this year's starting out really good.
Yep.
Also, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Out West. It's your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. And if you want to shop online, you can go to www.scvoutwest.com, enter the code WB100, and receive $10 off your first order. And I have to tell you that people have been doing that, and thank you so much. That means a lot to the purveyors of Out West. And, of course, their toll-free number is 877-340-9378.
Which reminds me, I got to get down there and get my outfit for the Buckaroo Bookshop in April.
Yes, Richard. Yes, we might even be able to, do a special, purveyor's discount for authors for that event, just like we do for performers.
Well, but that'll probably be wiped out by the fact I got to go into the big and tall section to get my stuff. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out.
We have that, and the Rock Mount Ranchwear line offers some things in tall. I'll do a little research for you. How's that?
That sounds like a plan.
Perfect. Okay, Bobby, you're
on. In 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 1-844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it on The Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. And call today.
Thank you.
And we thank them for sponsoring this show.
Now we've done just everything we need to do and we can go home.
Okay.
No, I think we have a little something more to
we do.
And
you know what? I got a hefty check from Target Freight yesterday. So they are just allowing us to be on for, another almost half a year. So
there you go.
Oh, my gosh. We really thank them.
We really, really do.
It's so much fun to do, isn't it, everyone?
We just love this show.
Oh, yeah.
We just absolutely love this show. Okay, tonight's guest is he's currently a craftsman. He works as a welder. He's a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and the U.S. Army. And Richard was pointing out as we were driving in tonight that family reunions, the Marines used to argue with the Army guys at the table, and it used to be a major. But if you're the only one that was in the military and you were in the Marines and the Army, do you argue with yourself? Just asking the question.
We also had Navy and Air
right.
Force at ours,
okay.
too. Okay.
His diverse background includes radioman. I need to ask because is that an RTO? But I'll ask that in a few minutes. He was a paratrooper, a pathfinder, a firefighter, EMT. His travels have taken him across much of America to Europe and the Middle East. He has been a student of leadership and much of his life has had a passion for the restoration of honor and integrity to the American government. For several years, he held closely the desire of writing a fictional novel. Rick lives in Tennessee with his wife and two wives and one children. No, his wife and two of four children. Where the other two are, I don't know. We'll ask that question, too. Okay. The name of his book, and it's fairly long.
Preserve and Defend.
There you go. And would you welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Rick Ferguson. Rick, you still on the line with us?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is why we ask you to write a bio, because I tell them what you write. So we tell them all, if you lied, your friends are going to know about it.
Well, after that reading, he may be on the phone to a divorce attorney with the two wives.
Two wives and one child. And hey, radioman, is that RTO?
Yes, sir.
Ah, I did that in Vietnam. I was in RTO. 2.5 years.
I think.
Okay, so for those of us that get stuck on abbreviations and such,
radio telephone operator. Radio telephone operator.
Ah, or, thank you.
Or known as a battery-operated grunt.
Or a Target store, because you have a big red one on your back. Yeah. Yep, that was me. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and this is your first interview, so we're going to be really gentle with you. I promised you the other night.
I appreciate that.
Huh? Yeah, I know you do.
I appreciate that.
They're not bad. I did my first radio interview about a year and a half ago, and you'll survive. You'll be fine.
Yeah, you have a good time. I mean, this is just a really lighthearted, easy show to get you. Bobby Jean, of course, she has moved away, and I'm sorry to say that I now have to sit in the studio and look at Richard, but that's okay.
Welcome to purgatory.
Welcome to no, pal. Welcome to But Bobby Jean, of course, will be with us on Thursday nights via phone, so that's okay. We can do this. And Rick, yeah. So kind of give me an idea of how long you were in the military, how long you, and what took you to the Middle East. That always, to me, has been kind of the clincher about life. Why would you ever want to go to the Middle East unless the military sent you?
Well, in the military, you go where they told you to.
Well, that's true.
I joined the Marine Corps at the start of my senior year in high school.
Okay.
It was what I had decided very young age, about 14, that that's what I was going to do. I joined the Marine Corps, and I did three deployments to the Mediterranean, which took me to Israel and Egypt, Tunisia, Oman, Kenya.
Wow.
I got to visit a lot of countries, and I was not your typical Marine. I just didn't hang out in the bars. I actually, you know, got to know the locals. I took tours. So I got a real look at the different cultures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it benefited me later in life. And then, of course, in Marine Corps was way overstaffed. They're only allowed so many in peacetime, and they closed off all the MOSs, and I didn't want to be a radio man anymore.
Well,
and there wasn't very many options, so I went into the Army and became an Army Pathfinder.
Well, that's nothing matter with that. That's good vocation if you can get it and stay alive.
Yes, I enjoyed every minute of my military time.
Did you? Well, good. You found time to write a book. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Preserve and Defend. It is quite a large tome, I do have to say. What's the word count of that? Richard and I were speculating on our way over here. Do you know?
I don't remember what it was when I finished. I know I said that I had 563 pages.
Yeah.
When the book came out, it was 812. I believe it was probably because of the size of font that I picked, and the fact that they neglected to tell me that the average book has 350 words on a page. I probably would have, I couldn't have shortened the book to take stuff out.
Uh-huh.
Would have taken away from the story.
Right.
But yeah, I've had a lot of people, you know, accuse me of trying to rewrite War and Peace.
Did you ever?
Well, I know I would have appreciated not a glossary, but even just a list of initials and what they stood for, and even the cast of characters. I don't know how you kept them all straight in your mind while you were writing, Rick, because you would introduce somebody, and I'd be like, wait, have we met this person before? And I'd be flipping back to, you know.
Right, right. And then you wouldn't hear about him until about another 150, 200 pages down.
Did you ever consider...
And you were very coy. Jim and Richard, did you find, like, you're reading along, and then you come to, like, a new section, and we're not sure who this person is? That we're seeing things through this person's eyes, and we're quickly trying to figure out if this is a returning character, is this a new character, and what's going to happen next?
Well, not so much that. I found myself wondering the same as last week's book. I mean, I came away from last week's book feeling like I was the dumbest son of a gun that ever walked the face of the earth. I have
there
no
I with you.
Oh my God, it was terrible. Where okay, Rick. Where did this book come from?
Yeah.
I started it in 2009. I developed the characters. I outlined how I outlined the story. I started writing it. I was a stay-at-home dad for 2 years. I
right.
had plenty of time. I had a newborn child, so, you know, other than you know, tending to him. I had plenty of time to write. I started writing the book, and then when I started the book and outlined it, when I write the book, I see it as almost as if I'm viewing a film. I see the thing playing out in front of me. So that created a challenge for me, and I threw it off of other writers to see if, you know, if they could give me some advice, because what I found myself doing is almost trying to write a screenplay instead of a book. Mm. So I struggled for the first 2 years. You know, I was doing a lot of research, and then I was also trying to get this to look like a story instead of a screenplay. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, I got a new job and moved out of state. I moved from Illinois down to Tennessee, and I actually put the book down for about 2 years and didn't even touch it. And then when I picked it back up, I just picked up right where I left off, and I would write maybe 4 hours a week, and then it was never a problem to I could set it down and come back, because I was putting myself in each one of the characters.
That was going to be my next question.
But it that's where it came from.
Well, it feels so very, I guess I would say, you know, ripped from today's headlines. And you chose to go ahead and have a very important part of the story. You're setting it, the activities against a national election at the same time. And this book just has so many layers of things going on. But that is contemporary life today. And some of it's terrifying, but it's so real. I think you write like it's happening right outside our doors. And for me, that's one reason I engaged and kept reading, because you really captured my imagination.
Well, it is happening right outside our doors.
Well, that's the scary thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And we don't want to do a lot of spoiler alert, but there are some things that go on that feels so, it just reminds us how vulnerable we really are. No matter where we live, we're very vulnerable.
Right. Now, Rick, are your characters, are they reminiscent of real people that you know, or are they totally made up of whole cloth?
They're totally made up. Actually, my first newspaper interview, the reporter was asking me, was my presidential candidate supposed to be Donald Trump? And I told her, I said, no, in 2009, I didn't even know he was on the horizon. it was coincidence. And it was coincidence that it got released right around the election. It was just, I was just writing it, and I really, at one point, there were several points where I had to actually go and take stuff out of the book, because I would come home and see it on the news.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? It looks like I did not want my book to look like I just sat down, watched the news,
and followed
and
CNN.
Out, yeah. You know, a book. So I had to take that off, and until finally, writer mentor of mine just told me, he said, you need to stop watching the news. So you never can get the book down.
Well, the second half of that question is, this is going to be a long answer question, so I had to kind of break it up a little bit. Was this story part of your own personal history and your own personal story? Did any of this happen to you personally, or is part of your life, or is it strictly a fictional account that you've just went along with your made-up characters?
It is strictly fictional. I did try to put some life lessons that I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to put that into some of the characters. There was a lot of things in my hero, as you would say, that were not necessarily all of me, but of other people that were close to me.
Mm-hmm.
What he stood for, how he portrayed himself, a lot of that was both myself and other people around me. Mm-hmm. I took some things from you know, my time in the military. I took things from my time in private industry as a welder. And there were, you know, there, a lot of it would be like the way somebody would carry themselves, or things that they would say, you know, that an individual's character. I took some things from there, but it's mostly fictional. Not, you know, there's nobody that it's not one person that it's written after.
Uh-huh. Well, it's quite the story. Also, if you want to call and talk to Rick tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And if you want to call and talk to Bobby Jane, you can reach her directly on her own number, and I won't give that to you. For those of you listening tonight, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of you, the noise in the background, if you are somewhat of a purveyor of the fine art of pornography, Amber Lynn has a studio right next to us, and she has got a bunch of people in her studio tonight.
Yeah.
So they must be having a party.
I hope it's just a party.
That's
all I'm going to say.
Oh, I was afraid you were hearing me making coffee.
Yeah, well, I doubt if they're making coffee. Whoopee, probably, but not coffee.
Hey, Rick, I got a question for you. You've got a lot of different locations in your book, and the one thing that I caught myself wondering is, did you use them because they just happened to work for the story you were telling, or
That's
because they were places that you had been to and you wanted to get in?
Some of the places fit the story. You know, my story kind of centered around Washington, D.C., Israel, Europe. But there were places, don't want to give a lot of stuff away, but Toulon, France, you know, I had visited there and spent 2 weeks there. And I really liked that city. And so when I started doing some of the research and saying, okay, where is this going to take place? I did go to places that I had been to, because I had somewhat a memory of, okay, this is what that city looks like. And I just, you know, I don't remember all the streets, but I know this is the main street. You know, it was familiar to me, and easier to try to paint the picture.
That's what I was going to ask you. Did you, by using some place that you'd spent some time at, was it easier to write that part of the story and bring a little bit more realism to your story from your perspective? That, to me, that carries over when an author's writing about an area that they've been to. You can kind of tell in the story. And I was wondering if you noticed that as well.
Yes, it was easier to say, okay, now when I was there, I remember this part. It was easier to do that. Some of the places that I picked that I hadn't ever visited or been there, I actually had to research the city and say, okay, this is what the city looks like, this is the highlights of the city, and try to bring it out. Now, you know, having visited some Middle East countries, they're not all the same, but there is a similarity, you know, in all the cities. And so I said, well, okay, this city in Iraq, well, it's not exactly the same as Cairo, Egypt, but there are certain things that are similar. And so I tried to paint the picture there.
Hmm. Well, man, they're just partying over there.
You also write some remarkable characters, both good guys and as we learn as we go along, sort of who the so-called, I guess, bad guys are. But I really liked Arthur Powell, I think was his name. I liked him a lot. And of course, Matt Hearns is like that super, you know, super guy that you just couldn't not enjoy being around, who's so very smart. You give him a nickname of the Prophet. Could you just take a moment and just tell us a little bit about both of those gentlemen?
Yes. Arthur was, I wanted a character who was an investigative reporter. I really have a lot of respect for those people, they go into some places that, you know, just frankly would scare most people to death. But and they're not afraid to dig and find out, you know, what the truth is. And so my character was one in Arthur that was one that was, he was driven to find out what the truth is. And so I didn't want somebody who looked like somebody that we have on TV right now. So I gave him a lot of problems. I gave him a lot of bad history. And I gave him struggles that he, as he was progressing through the book, that he was having to deal with. And Matt Hearns, you know, he was my hero, but because of the government agency that he worked for, sometimes stereotypes come in. So I made him in some ways larger than life. I mean, he was 6'5", you know, he stood out in the room because nobody could miss him. But I also made him very humble. Lots of times, you know, I had sent something off and some guy told me, he said, well, you can nickname him the Gentle Giant. And then I said, no, I got another idea. I said, he's going to be nicknamed the Prophet. And I developed this unique capability about him is that he could look at intelligence and see what was going on a lot quicker than most other people. And so during the Cold War, he was able to come up with things that the Soviets were doing before they, you know, and it thwarted their plans. And so, you know, out of respect, the Russians gave him the nickname the Prophet because, you know, he was able to see things that most people wouldn't see.
Yeah, I enjoyed both of those gentlemen very much, and of course, I would have voted for the man that you have running for president in a heartbeat. No problem there. He's a cowboy.
There you go. There you go. Hey, let's talk a little bit about.
And I tried to paint him as the ultimate grandpa. He was everybody's, you know. He was.
Excuse me.
A grandpa to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk just a little bit about this is your first novel, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever take any creative writing classes?
No, sir.
Ah.
I am an avid reader. I've read lots and lots of books, and I'm a Clancy fan. Clancy and Dale Brown are my two favorite.
Gotcha.
So which was the better Clancy book, The Hunt for Red October or A Cardinal of the Kremlin? You're being tested on this one, by the way.
Yeah, there will be a quiz after the show.
I personally enjoyed The Hunt at October better.
Okay. To me, Cardinal was kind of nice because of the old man's history, the old Soviet soldier who was feeding the information to Ryan and the CIA. That his backstory was really fascinating. But Hunt for Red October was good. Clancy wrote some very good stuff.
Yes, he did. It's very detailed stuff.
Have you ever heard anybody comparing your stuff to Clancy yet?
No, not yet. I've heard a couple of people throw it out there, but I'm not. I don't think I'm ready to say, you know, that. Yeah, I write like Tom Clancy. If other people want to say it, that's fine. But I'm not.
There you go.
I've had a couple of people do that to me, and it's like, no. Tom Clancy and my name should never be mentioned in the same sentence. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
So give us some time.
That's why I give the caveat at the front of all my books. If you're looking for Louis L'Amour, you'll never find him here. Let me take a minute here to talk briefly about All Dogs Rule, and we'll be back to you in just a few minutes. If you wouldn't mind, Rick, we're going to put you back on hold, and we're going to go sell some time over at All Dogs Rule. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees, and a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one night, two nights, or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you, and probably they just want to be there all the time anyway. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? The answer, of course, is the dog's. Check out their website, alldogsrule.com. Give them a call, 805-524-1100, and your dog will thank you. Okay, Russ, I did my duty. Okay. We're back with Bobby Jean and Rick. And I got a couple questions here for you, Rick. Where do you write when you sit down and you want to be... You have, of course, two kids home and numerous wives, according to your bio. So where do you write? Where do you go to where it's peaceful and you can write without being bothered?
I have an office that I go into, shut the door. I'll tell you, most of the writing of this book was done underneath my welding hood.
Is that right?
I would sit there, be at work welding, and I would be just, through my mind, I would see all this stuff, and I would make notes. You know, at break time, I'd make a few notes. My wife had bought me a recorder, and I would make notes and make recordings and everything, and then I'd come home at night, and I would, you know, that particular chapter or that segment of the book, I would write it out.
Uh-huh.
And that's how most of the book got wrote, was while I was working. But I do have a place where I can get off and by myself. There were times when I would actually go out of the house, maybe down to a library or coffee shop, and where I'm actually out in the public and there's noise going on.
Right.
And I would write some stuff there. But it's, you know, and there was a few times where, you know, wife and kids went to bed, and I just stayed up all night writing.
Wow.
It was quiet.
Wow. Yeah, I know Amber's really loud over there. Wow. She's never been this loud before. They must, alcohol must be involved. Okay. Do you have another plans for more books of this nature?
Yes, there's a sequel to this one.
Okay.
It will be a little. It will pick up on right now five of the characters from the book. It will pick up, and it will. If you've noticed that in the event I left off where there were some major key characters in the book that I just left it off, and what happened to them? Well, they get picked up in the sequel. I left a lot of questions unanswered that those will all get answered in the sequel.
Uh-huh.
And it'll introduce a couple new characters.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I'm going to, but that will end the preserve and defend. And then I have, I actually have three I want to release this year. And I'm going to go into different genres too. I have a couple leadership books that I want to release. One of them actually started as a daily blog at work on a project we were on, and I got so much positive feedback on it that people said, man, you need to turn that into a book.
Uh-huh.
So I think I'm going to.
So who's your publisher right now?
Ex Libris published Preserve and Defend.
Okay.
So will the sequel be as long as the original book?
Good question.
No.
It won't. Okay, I was going to say, if it is as long, you really need to consider cutting that puppy in half and having two books.
So you may have four books.
Yeah, actually, I've had several people, you know, they've said, I love this story, I love this book, I just wish you would have made it two books and dropped it off at Thanksgiving. And I said, oh, okay. I mean, you learn.
Hey, Bobby Jean?
You know, you learn from people.
Bobby Jean, would you like to ask the question?
Oh.
Oh, I would like to ask a question.
Rick is trembling now.
Rick's show is called The Writer's Block, and we love to inquire whether you have ever had writer's block or not, or even believe or don't believe in it.
Yes. Two really bad ones and about three or four that were able to just figure out a way to get through it.
Uh-huh.
The two worst were after I said I dropped it for about 2 years, I didn't touch it. I picked it back up, and it seemed like, boom, I went right back in. It was easy. Everything was flowing. And then all of a sudden, I got to a point where, okay, and it particularly happened after there was a real-life event.
Uh-huh.
I had to scrap part of the book. And I said, now what do I do? And it took about 3 weeks before I could just even... open my computer back up and start again.
Uh-huh.
I just had to totally get away from it.
Right.
And then the other one was right as I was getting ready to get done with the thing, and I was looking for that one thing to end it, but give people the appetite for the next one,
right.
For the sequel.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I did not know, there was a point where I had three characters that I did not know how to end.
Uh-huh.
And mm. it took me a while to get through that, too. So, yes, I do believe in writer's block. The best thing I found is to walk away and read something. Just go do something that you hadn't been doing for a while.
Yeah.
Go fishing. Go
Watch a really bad movie.
Watch bad movies. The things that you weren't doing while you were
exactly.
writing. Go do them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to be running out of time here real soon. There's a few small little questions we have left for you. Outline or no outline? Did you work with an outline or no?
Yes, I had an outline.
Okay. This because this show, as we spoke the other night, is geared towards new writers. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it's all questions that if they were sitting in front of you at some kind of a panel, that's a question that somebody would ask you. So that's what we try to, that's the questions we try to ask on this show. Of course, we don't always make it because a lot of times we're laughing and giggling and listening to Amber next door.
trying to hear the guest instead of Amber. It's a task.
I know you have a website. I was on the website for Preserve and Defend. Do you want to give that website out, plus your email address, and where they can find this book?
Yes, it's the website is www.preserveanddefendbook.com.
Okay.
There is my Facebook page is Preserve and Defend. They can like and follow there. I usually try to post stuff on there about what's going on and related topics. I'm trying to get more people to be interactive, but I think people think it's only for me to talk on there and not them. So
that's
maybe I can get some people to come on that'll actually engage in good conversation, especially more authors on there.
Well, and we invite you to come on over when you're putting something on your page. Just come on over and
put it
on
the writer's block pad. Yeah,
too.
For sure. Because we love comments. We're not infallible.
And then my email address is kingdomservant53@yahoo.com.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Rick, it's been a hoot. I'm sorry we couldn't have you on a little bit longer, but we do have our roving reporter. Henry will be calling in here momentarily. So we're going to have to cut you a little short for tonight, but please feel free. Call in anytime you want. We're on the air, 7 to 8 o'clock Pacific time here at LA Talk Radio. And you're more than welcome to call in and kind of give us an update what's going on and when stuff's coming in. And of course, you know that the phones work because we're not talking to you and you're in Tennessee.
Yep.
So, and of course, Bobby Jean is in Albuquerque. Quirky because she's quirky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and again.
Well, thank you. It was an honor.
It was an honor having you, sir. And we hope that you do get a hold of the bookie, which is my wife, Jerry, and rebook and come back and see us.
I will.
Okay,
thank you.
Good enough. Good night, Rick.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. And let's see. Henry, is that you?
It is your roving reporter, Henry Clark.
Well, you got Bobby Jean and Henry. Oh, my God. Look at you guys. What be happening, my brother?
Hey, how are you?
Good evening, Henry.
Good evening.
You started
Happy
something.
New Year.
I started
Happy
a joke.
Thank you. Oh, and Jim, happy birthday, too.
Oh, thank you. I have to say that my wife, Jerry, whom you've met, she was, of course, been down now for a week and a half with the flu, so I had to take myself to, like, a late lunch, early dinner, happy hour with some friends, but it was okay. It was a lot of fun. That was last Friday, incidentally. Thanks for asking, Henry.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
mm-hmm.
nice of you.
Yeah, now, you take care of yourself and look at that as a rehearsal celebration, and when you get all better, do it again.
Okay. Jerry, I know you're listening to this, so Henry has given you great advice. Just now.
I live to give great advice. and to tell you what's in the roundup.
I was just going to say, and let us know what's in the roundup. So talk to me, my brother.
It's funny you should ask. In this weekend's roundup, I'm going to be reviewing a terrific new Western, Hostiles, starring Christian Bale, Wes Studi, and Rosamund Pike, which opens in theaters on January 19th.
Right.
It's very good, very grim at times, very in-your-face in the sort of Saving Private Ryan way, unflinching. Bale's an Army captain fresh from the Civil War and the Indian Wars, very bitter, who's ordered to escort Wes Studi, a Cheyenne chief, and his family through dangerous territory, I should say. One of the film's real strengths is that it doesn't treat all Indians as one group. For instance, the Cheyenne and the Comanche are like not friends united against the white man.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The writer-director, Scott Cooper, made Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges, but his Western creds actually go back farther than that as an actor. He acted in Gods and Generals and the excellent miniseries Broken Trail, both with Robert Duvall.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So he's a very talented guy. I'm also going to be running my article on the film Tombstone Rashomon, Alex Cox's fascinating study of the gunfight at the OK Corral from many different points of view.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's some great silent movie news coming from the Autry Museum.
Uh-oh. You know,
well, no, it's good.
No.
For years.
Well, like, what is it? What
I
is
love
it?
You, Henry.
Right.
Leave us hanging.
You know the odds of that with me.
Yeah.
For years, they've had their monthly What is a Western screening series. They're showing Stagecoach on January 20th. And every second month, they screen a Gene Autry double feature. They're now adding a new film series, The Silent Treatment, featuring silent westerns with a live piano accompaniment by Cliff Ritalik, who we know from the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. He's a terrific pianist. And careful how you say that. And starting on January 27th with James Cruise's epic The Covered Wagon from, of course, 1923.
Wow.
That's very cool.
So it is silent movies, is what you're saying. Now
exactly,
we have to sit here quietly, which is impossible for us.
No, I don't expect that. You know, my earliest memory of a movie is watching Fatty Arbuckle and Mabel Normand in Mabel and Fatty Adrift, and my father reading me the titles because I didn't know how to read, and people shushing us.
Oh, my. You know,
now, that was like 1919 that it came out. I was not back there then. We were seeing it at the Museum of Modern Art.
Hey, like, you're not that old.
If I was, I think how old my dad would be.
Mabel Normand, she was mentioned in Druxman's book about, what's his name? Oh, crap. The director that was killed back in 1922? William Desmond Davis.
Say again?
William Desmond Davis.
William Desmond Taylor.
Taylor.
Right.
I'll take both of your words on that one. I got nothing on
that. It just popped into my head when you said Mabel Normand. Okay, on with Henry.
Right. Okay. Oh, also at the Autry on Tuesday, January 16th, Rob Ward's Word on Westerns luncheon series, they're going to be looking at the roles of women and children in Western films. And, you know, Rob always gets terrific guests. So those are always great fun and illuminating.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to brag, but I will.
Okay.
Because just like Ralphie's old man, I just won a major award.
Oh. Well, Bobby Jean has that major award.
And it's for Geely. I won first place in the Western Writers of America's Tweet Us a Western contest.
You did? Honest to God?
I did.
Congratulations, Henry.
Congratulations.
Thank you. What you had to do was to write a complete Western story in 280 characters or less, the length of a tweet.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
So in the roundup, I'm going to run my winning entry in its entirety, unedited, all 275 characters. It should take about 7 seconds.
Now, you see, when you said 275 characters, I went right back to tonight's book because I think there were at least 275 characters in that.
No, I'm thinking more like 275,000 characters.
Right.
Oh, that's exciting, Henry. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Way to go, Henry.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. And oh, and please check out the February 2018 True West magazine, where we asked readers to help us choose the most historically accurate Westerns. And in my column, you can take a look at the High Chaparral series.
Oh, okay.
And you can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you so much. Mr. Henry.
So, Henry, where are you at on Twitter? If you won the tweet contest, you have to be on Twitter. So,
It's, I think, H Roundup or something like that. You know, the weird thing is I tweet so rarely that I didn't know for weeks that I'd won.
Does it hurt when you tweet?
No. Hey, Wes Studi, who you mentioned, has a Twitter account, and he and I follow each other. I have no idea why he follows me. But I followed him back, so you can hop on and find Wes.
Well, I know why, because you're such a sterling personality.
Oh, somebody lied to that poor guy.
I know, huh? Well, this is radio.
Oh, nobody, here it is.
We could be sitting
Twitter
here naked, too.
My Twitter account is H West Roundup.
There you go.
All right.
Anyone want to send me anything, I'll read it.
I will tweet you tonight. That sounds wrong, you know?
Be careful. It'll probably be coming from somebody like Nebo Kirschbaum. Henry, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a great week, folks.
Take care, my friend. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Bye, Henry.
You betcha.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bobby Jean, another great show.
Yes.
You sound like you're sitting right here next to me.
I haven't been on for a couple of weeks, and I was missing it terribly.
Were you?
So wonderful to be back with y'all tonight.
Were you going through withdrawals?
Yes, and you know, I was so eager to get back to reading because in the last flurry of packing and just all of the craziness of, you know, trying to get ready for that moving van, that 52-foot moving van to come,
right.
I really hadn't done any reading. And, you know, we read just all the time where it's like breathing, and to suddenly not be reading was just felt so weird. So I was so happy to have Rick's book because reading that book was almost like when we would read for a whole month to prepare for four shows. We kind of did it for one show.
Right, right. I can't say it was cathartic, but it was interesting. So, at any rate, and you're just like you're sitting here next to me. You sound like you're
right here. Well, I can see Richard there and you there.
Yep,
and
we're here.
It's kind of, I've probably been making more noise than normal because I went ahead and made a cup of coffee and I walked into another room because Jim came in the kitchen. And so it's a little different from being in the studio.
Well, you're wearing a headset, though, right?
I'm sorry, say again?
You're wearing a headset?
Actually, I'm just on my phone. I did invest in a wonderful new mic, but my computer doesn't seem to recognize it, and we're in the process of replacing my laptop, which is on its final legs anyway. So,
gotcha.
Probably when I'm back on, next week I'll be back on the regular phone, but then maybe after that, the mic and a laptop will be all set and ready to go again.
Trust me, you have not made more noise than the noise that's coming from next door.
Yeah.
See, I'm not hearing anything.
Well, that's good.
Thank goodness.
That's good.
So maybe
that's
our
good.
Listeners aren't hearing it either.
Oh, I can guarantee you Jerry's gonna hear it. Anyway, I was if I didn't feel so crappy today, I was gonna surprise you guys and call you and Gary on Campfire Cafe. But I didn't get around to it.
Oh, That would have been fun. And we, our guest this morning, Doris Daly, is just a phenomenal wordsmith, cowgirl, cowboy poet. But she really, we refer to her as a wordsmith. And she and Eli Barcy just released a brand new project, CD project, and we were premiering tracks for the very first time today. It doesn't come out until January 8th. And the whole time I was talking to Doris, I was like, you know, I need to get her on the writer's block.
Well, you know how to do it.
She's a phenomenal poet. And so, we'll see if we can get her in towards the end of the year. I'll send her all the information.
You know how to do it. Okay, Richard.
So I do. When Jim and I finish our little project, do we get to get on your show is the question.
No, because that's music.
Oh,
and horses.
They have
cowboy poetry.
We got horses in ours. Come on.
Yeah, we do. We actually have cowboys, too. Some dead ones.
Yeah, we could probably put a show together that would make sense.
Oh,
and
Gary
Richard,
would probably say.
When I listened to last week's podcast, or actually the week before, I heard that the next anthology of Sherlock Holmes stories is out, and you are again participating in that. I look forward to reading that.
Once again, I was banished to Volume 2. I don't know why they keep sending me to the back, but I'm in there, yeah.
Well, he just got a request to do it again, and I browbeat him into saying no.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on the fourth project. There's no time left for it.
We're out of time.
Yeah.
We're quickly running out of gunky. So it's just like, wow. Okay, Bobby Jean, thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
From Denver.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Feel better.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And next week, we're not sure who our guest is going to be. If we don't hear from the writer that's supposed to be on here next week, then we are going to call my publicist, Mickey Mickelson, up at Creative Edge in Canada, and have him on the show.
Maybe talk a little marketing for the writers.
Talk a little marketing for writers and how to market themselves and how he can help market them. And the guy is good. We have had several of his writers on this show, and we have several more coming up this year. So... love to have him on the show. Mickey, if you're listening.
Get ready.
I'll be giving you a call. Okay, Richard, great having you.
As always, it's been fun to be
love
here.
Love seeing you in the chair. And
but I'm not wearing the blonde wig.
I am not going there. I know. What are you going to do? Okay, from myself and Richard and Bobby Jean, this is the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. We'll be here next Thursday. Don't know what time, but it's probably going to be right around 7 o'clock.
I hope so.
And with that, we are out of here.